Do you feel now more than ever that you need to make a shift in your wellness? Listen to this podcast, Inner Wellness, with Dr. Naz Parsian. Let's make the shift happen. Are you a teacher, leader, manager, coach, consultant, or a public speaker, or you just simply want to learn more about speaking? And did you know that speaking is a very significant and powerful skill to make you free from fear, from any connection blocks and disconnection, and also can help to improve your wellness, inner wellness? Yes, it can. Speaking is absolutely a powerful skill. I have a guest today with some amazing information. Actually, we go a little bit, you know, deep down the rabbit hole just to discuss about some other things as well. But basically, the discussion is about embodied or enlivened speaking, and how using an enlivened speaking can just, you know, make you free, just break through your connection, break through your power, and give you more freedom to connect to your audience and also connect to yourself. So at the same time, you can improve your own inner wellness and just get rid of all unnecessary fear and limits, and connect to the audience and let them free of their own blocks and disconnection. Doesn't it sound so amazing? I never thought that speaking could be that much powerful. And I'm a teacher also anyway, so that's why perhaps I'm so interested about this topic, but I definitely would be interested to know more about it through the research later on in relation to our health and wellness and how it does affect, you know, biologically and physiologically the body health and balance. So let's just dive into it and know a little bit more about embodied speaking or enlivened speaking. I think, you know, you would love it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Inner Wellness Podcast. Actually, I had a little bit of break because I needed a few weeks. I was away from podcast because I'll tell you later what was happening in my side. But today I'm very excited with a new guest, a friend of mine and a very inspiring person, Miroslav Petrovic. And he is a TEDx speaker also, a teacher and facilitator who has worked with over 5,000 people across the world, supporting them to bring their message to the world. Through the Enlivened Speaking Institute, he teaches how to go beyond didactic talking at people and how to deliver your message in an embodied way that is enlivening and engaging for audience. Oh, that is quite relevant to me as a teacher. Last year, he completed a thesis on the topic of embodied teaching and learning, and how it creates more engagement within teaching dynamics. His message and off-the-beaten-path approach speaks to thought leaders, future visionaries, progressive educators, and transformational leaders who are empowered to move away from traditional teaching methodologies and embrace a deeper, more conscious way of communicating and teaching through mind, body, and spirit. Wow. Is fascinated by how we can be more fully alive with everything we do, and believes that being in connecting with our own personal presence is the most important dynamic relationship we have in life. This is the power of presence. Welcome to the show, Miroslav.
Thank you, Naz. It's beautiful to be here.
I'm so glad, so excited to have you here on the board. And the words that I read through your bio completely connected to me, because I totally know that you are very authentic and absolutely in integrity with these words. So tell us a little bit about yourself. What brought you here, you know, just to this journey? I actually never heard about your journey. Tell us a little bit about your story and what happened.
I guess in brief, like, what brought me here was a spiritual path. And when I say spiritual, it's not the way people might think of it immediately. For me, I was very, very, very suppressed as a child. I hardly used to speak. I used to stutter. It was like got bullied in school. I came to Australia as a refugee as well, so English wasn't my first language either. So my relationship to the world from a very early age was like feeling estranged, I think is the word, like when you feel like you don't belong. And I was probably depressed for some years without even knowing it, up until I found meditation. And when I started meditating, it started giving me this deeper relationship within myself. And I was like, I love this. And like, it let me feel something other than this constricted, socially anxious state I'd always been living in. And as I began meditating and falling more in love with it, I was like, this is amazing, but I can't live my life with my eyes closed, you know? It's like there was a yearning to, like, the question I was asking myself is, how do I begin to connect with people in this way? And what naturally arose, like, I still remember one of the key moments for me. I was in my first training, and I was nervous about being there. I felt like I didn't belong. And the teacher had just shown us an exercise, and he's like, now you're going to teach each other. And because I was so shy and quiet, I didn't have a partner. It was like, you know, not being picked for the sporting team or something. And he came up to me and he signaled, and he's like, come over here, I'll do the exercise with you. And like, that was the worst thing that could have happened. I was a bit scared.
Yeah.
And I started going through the exercise and explaining it to him, and he was like an older man, like long graying hair, and he had these glasses, and he pulled them over to the tip of his nose, and he looked at me over his glasses.
Okay.
He was like, you're a teacher, you're supposed to, you know, speak and bring this work into the world.
Yeah.
And when he said it, like in my conscious mind there was so much doubt, but another part of me was also like, I already know that, and that's what's scary. It's like, speaking and being in front of people is the scariest thing I can imagine. And I know that's where my life is going. This idea of that feeling that I started cultivating in meditation, teaching and speaking and facilitating, became a way to build deeper relationships with people by bringing them into a similar state and sharing deeper connection, essentially.
Wow. Yeah, this is actually... this is so important, you know, for our educators and teachers, because as an academic, being in this, you know, industry for so many years, I feel, to be honest, there is a big gap in connection with yourself, with your body, with your soul, when we teach. And this connection, we know that it can easily, you know, be delivered to the audience. But how do you, or what, you know, how do you describe this, you know, embodied speaking can can improve this connection and carrying the messages to the audience?
Yeah, so if I was to give it a loose, like two very loose, and they're very specific models, but in brief, in the old model, and I studied like teaching in academia, I've done a lot of different trainings in speaking and facilitation type of trainings. And the old school model, which I call it, is like, we get a sense of safety through structure. So mm-hmm. if it's speaking, it's like you memorize your talk, you write, you edit, you recite, and you keep reciting. Mm-hmm. And it's a sense of safety because you know every single word you're going to say. In teaching, it's more like having a lesson plan and rigidly sticking to that lesson plan.
Yeah, that's right.
For me, it became like, I tried that approach. I was like, this doesn't work. It's like, it's boring and it's forced and it's fake and I'm just not being real with people.
Yeah.
My method, which I call like more an enlivened approach to speaking, is about building safety for relationship. So if I, as the speaker, can open myself up and connect with the audience in a genuine way, they're going to feel that. And when you're being genuine with someone, you don't need like hooks and, you know, techniques to bring people into engagement. When we're being real and honest and authentic with each other, it's natural to be engaged.
Yeah, that's right. And how, you know, what are the feedback you get from audience when you use this method? What do they say?
I couldn't take my eyes off you. It was so easy listening to you. I felt everything you said. Like people talk to me feeling a lot more, like not just receiving the ideas, but they were like, yeah, I felt that. My thesis, so at the time I was studying yoga, and you know about this loosely, but I'll just give a synopsis for the listeners.
What
I did was research with my yoga students on how differently they experience my teaching style compared to other teachers they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a bit more, you could say, rigorous research as opposed to just feedback from people after a stage.
Yeah.
And what came up synonymously through the interviews was students saying that when I'm in your class, I'm just present.
Yeah.
And like other teachers will tell me to be present, but it's like it goes in one ear and out the other. And when you're teaching, it's like I'm actually just here. I'm so fully in the room and in my own body having this experience with you. And it's like the rest of the world doesn't even exist.
That actually totally, you know, relates, because that's what I said about this connection, because a lot of things, you know, we say, okay, do this, do that. But if it's not really connecting to ourselves, it's not connecting to audience. So, that makes totally sense. How does it actually relate to your iPad? I'm not sure if I should ask about what you shared about your, was it your grandpa or?
Yeah, you can ask, that's fine.
Yeah, is it fine? All right, so because that actually, I was so excited to know more about that journey, because you shared about your grandpa journey from that camp. How does that journey, you know, or how did that journey affect you just to find your own journey through this way? Do you think that, you know, the whole process of those, you know, I don't know, suffering in the past generation helped you to find a new meaning, something like that? Or I know that these kinds of things is a little bit down the rabbit hole, but if you can just touch on a little bit, to know what this really deep connection that you have with yourself and with your body, what is this originally coming from? Maybe it's related to what, you know, has been experienced before by your generation, or I don't know, or in your own life, because we know that we all have soul connections and that kinds of stuff, and we have stories that can connect to us really deeply. So does that make sense, or is my question clear? Yeah,
just for context, I shared on my Facebook a few weeks ago about my great-grandfather, who was in prison at Jasenovac, which was a Nazi concentration camp, and he managed to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, since sharing that story, I found out my great-uncle was in Auschwitz, and he managed to survive as well, which I was like, oh, wow, that information only came to me like after I shared this story. And my father mm-hmm. reached out, and he was like, did you know you had another relative? I was like, no idea. And on one level already, it's crazy. Like, how, like, maybe at some stage in my life he had even told me that, but it never really registered. And yeah. I think the importance of preserving or recording or remembering the stories of our ancestors, I think that's like absolutely crucial. And in regards to what you were asking, like the relationship to that. So I've had like a base level of, I don't want to say depression, because people, unless you've experienced it, you have an idea about depression that probably isn't true.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I have different ideas, to be honest. I'm a health professional, but, you know, sorry, yeah, I have different ideas. You know, depression is not always bad.
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes it's even useful. Like, I think grieving is a normal human emotion.
Yeah.
But in my case recently, it's like, and I've been looking into myself quite actively, like my meditation, that story I described before, I think that was about 13 years ago. Yeah. And those early moments really built a lifelong relationship with wanting to be as deeply intimate with life as I could be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this depression thing had kind of been in the background. It's still kind of in the background. Sometimes it's very strongly in the foreground and it's a bit debilitating when it is. And recently I had a couple of experiences where, you know, it would come up, wouldn't really want to get out of bed. Life would just kind of feel hard. When I was younger, this would go on for weeks. Now it's less frequent. And on this one occasion, I went to an acupuncturist, I went to another spiritual teacher, and both of them pretty much said the exact same thing. They were like, Miroslav, this is genetic.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even yours. Like, what you're carrying is like passed down from your bloodlines or your ancestors. And both times they said it, my body just went into like complete bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And not like it's kind of like a pleasurable bliss, but it's kind of like being plugged into a socket where you just get goosebumps through your whole body, which is generally what I call a relationship to truth.
Yeah. Like
not an absolute truth, but a truth inside my body that's very in alignment for my own journey.
Yeah.
And both times this particular ancestor that had escaped the concentration camp came to mind.
Mm.
And I was like, wow, on some level, I've been carrying his trauma and fear and, you know, suppression. And after sharing this, and this was only on that Facebook call that I did with my brother shared when he was younger, he used to have nightmares about being beaten by Nazi officers.
Mm-hmm.
And he just put it down to imagination. He had no idea about either of our ancestors and the experiences they'd been through.
Mm.
And as we kind of continue to unpack this, I'm like, beyond me and my ancestors, I feel this is relevant for all of us because we've all been suppressed at some point.
Yes.
Like when you look at war and whether that's colonialism or,
yeah,
you know, like mine is former Yugoslavia, you have Muslims fighting other Muslims. It's like human beings in their blood have found ways to disagree and suppress each other.
Mm. Yeah.
And I feel that's a massive part to do with the fear of speaking in this lifetime, even when we live in a first world country where it's not that much of a threat, you know, you can more or less say whatever you believe. You probably won't go to prison for it, but the fear of getting on stage and speaking is very real. And I feel a lot of this is perhaps inherited trauma as well.
Mm. That's so interesting. And, you know, there was something that I needed to have a consultation with, you know, a reliable person a few years ago. And that guy he was a very good, you know, psychologist and hypnotherapist, basically. And he was very intuitive. And that guy actually told me that, you know, out of nowhere, he just told me that you have a deep depression. And I just went, you know, a little bit defensive. And he said that it's not a depression like a clinical depression. It's something that you have been, you know, questioning everything since you were a child, and you came with some big questions about who am I, where am I, what I'm doing in the world, what is this world, you know, doing, where the world is going. And I just looked at him and I said, yes, that's absolutely right. And he said, yes, and this path actually is good for you. This is a blessing for you. This is taking you to the inner truth that, you know, and yeah, this is exactly, but when I'm reflecting right now, you know, possibly I had similar things in my ancestor, and because I have been gone through so many things too, you know, I'm coming from a place that I witnessed war, you know, revolution, you know, a lot of things. Yeah. So perhaps it's something that I need to investigate in my own journey as well. Just so how you can connect, you know, this particular aspect that, you know, that we just discussed, it's very deep actually, but how you can connect this to the concept that you have come up with, embodied speaking. So this is just, I don't know, this is just something very, to be honest, very new, and it really impressed me, the topic that you are working on. How do you think that, you know, all those past perhaps suffering that's considered as a blessing for you, and finding, you know, your pathway to presence or those things, how brought you to this concept, embodied speaking, only because you had a fear of speaking? Was it the only reason, or are there other reasons behind it?
That's a good question. I wanted to say, just on the previous topic before I respond, for anyone that is interested, I'm like, to someone that hasn't done much exploration inside themselves, it can sound a bit like out there. And a good place to check out is Bert Hellinger's work. Bert Hellinger created family constellations.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he was a Dutch psychologist, or if not, somewhere like that.
Mm-hmm.
And family constellations is basically looking at ancestral trauma.
Oh.
It's like, it's embodied. You're not just talking psychology. It's like you see it played out in front of you.
Yeah.
Notes as well, on a more physical level. I remember years and years ago, I read research by the Mayo Clinic that you'd be familiar with them, for anyone that mm-hmm. isn't. They're mm-hmm. quite a well-regarded medical body,
mm-hmm.
Where they were basically tracking the DNA of Jewish Holocaust survivors,
mm-hmm.
and they were finding alterations in the offspring of the children,
yeah,
had ancestors that had survived concentration camps.
Yeah,
and you know, I used to tell this story as if it was separate to me. I'm like, oh yeah, this happened to the Jews. I never actually had that relationship. Like, oh shit, my ancestors were there too. And on a bigger level, like, yeah, this was studied. I mean, Holocaust concentration camps was a very intense version of this.
Yeah.
But oppression, suppression, torture, you know, these kind of things have happened in other lines, in different labels as well. And Bert Hellinger found, I think his work claimed that ancestral trauma goes about 7 generations back. And wow. The idea is basically anything that hasn't been resolved in that person's lifetime will need to be resolved at some stage down the track.
Wow. Like,
need to be given a voice or expression at some stage.
That's so interesting, yeah.
Yeah. It's fascinating.
It is. Oh.
to kind of move that forward.
Oh, I just imagine now. Oh, God.
Yeah. And, you know, some of these things, it's not like everything needs to be located and expressed. It's like the pieces that are most starving for attention are the ones that will be heard and expressed.
Yeah.
So I feel there's a real sense of power in that.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to how this comes to embodied or enlivened speaking. So early on in my spiritual journey, I started noticing when I would begin leaning into fear,
mm-hmm.
which for me was predominantly through speaking and being seen, my mind was very quiet. And I was like, oh, wow, it would take me a while to make my mind go that quiet with meditation. Mm-hmm. But if I leaned in towards fear, it would happen fairly quickly. The difference was, with fear, there's a lot of story associated.
So yeah.
Because I'd developed a relationship to presence,
mm-hmm.
Through meditation, there was a capacity to kind of lean back out of the story and just experience the sensations in the body when fear came up.
Yeah, that's right. And
it became quite a pleasurable experience.
Yeah.
And then stepping through the doorway of, cool, I'm going to get on stage, or I'm going to get up and speak, or I'm, you know, I'm going to decide to run my first workshop. It's like, yeah, it was scary, but the fear actually felt pleasurable.
Mm-hmm.
And in my TED talk, I go into more detail around that specific topic, which I just feel I'd point people there if they want different distinctions and different traditions, perspectives of on fear.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I started realizing that our relationship to fear is misguided in the West,
yeah,
primarily because of us not having clear language and distinctions about it.
Mm-hmm.
And fear is more like an opening to our full potential. And
yes,
that's really scary. It's like, to quote that Marianne Williamson poem, you know, we're more afraid of our greatest light than our deepest shadows.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we're shining and when we're being seen, it's a scary thing. We get a lot of attention very quickly.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah. And that's a very, you know, empowering journey. I'm just thinking that, does it work with, because I'm more, you know, into scientific aspects of human as well. Does it work with those, you know, how does it work with nervous system? Like, you know, because fear, you know, has some manifestations in the body, in the actual, you know, nervous system. And I'm just thinking how releasing that fear through speaking, does it relieve those, for example, fight and flight, you know, responses in our body? Or, for example, my speaking can make me calm and manage my fear and manage my fears, you know, the manifestation of fear in my body, like, you know, adjust perhaps sympathetic and parasympathetic functions. How does it work? I know that possibly your area is not health, but
actually I have a really nice piece for you. As you were asking the question, I brought this up. So there were studies that were done on monks.
Mm-hmm.
By, I can't remember the scientist's name. It comes from a book called Scream by Margie Kerr. The
mm-hmm.
scientist was something like Greg something. But basically he found that in studying monks, and specifically to do with fear, their capacity for meditation and presence allowed them to bring more attention to the experience to decide what to do with the somatic sensations.
Mm-hmm.
And as a direct quote, he goes, our sympathetic nervous system becomes aroused through fear.
Yeah.
The through fear bit. And then we interpret the arousal with cognitive manipulation and coordination between the limbic system and the prefrontal cortex.
Okay. Yeah, that does make sense.
So just to translate that to like simple English for listeners, it means sensations are happening in the body. We're taking those sensations into the mind and making them mean something.
Yeah.
Whereas in reality, those sensations don't have any meaning. But meditation or presence is just the skill set to be able to slow down that, the speed with which we go from sensation to meaning making. So when fear comes up, we don't even label it as fear.
We just
feel it as sensations in the body.
Yeah. And does it make any difference? Does words make any difference? So for example, when you speak, just to release those things, I don't know, how should I choose my words, for example? Should I just, you know, leave them to come by themselves? You know what I mean? Should I control my words in speaking? Or so is it happening under my control and is it totally conscious process, or is it just flowing by itself?
I think early on it begins as a very conscious process to separate
mm-hmm.
between the two. It's like
mm-hmm.
early a habit. But as you begin to do it, I think it becomes very natural. And for me, there's a sense, and this has been like this for a very long time now, that unless I'm feeling what some people might call fear, I think of it more like an on switch. So unless that on switch comes on before I speak, it's like the speaking engagement isn't of very much significance. It's like, there's not much interesting that's going to happen here. And it's usually like, it doesn't come on when there's no, when there's like no, when there's nothing on the table, you know, someone's asked me to come speak, but they haven't told anyone who's going to be speaking. And I'm just like speaking before someone else. That's one of those environments. Like nothing will get activated. I'm just in front of people and it's just going to be easy. But if I'm like, if I've created a stage and I'm bringing people and they know they're coming for a certain topic, then there's always going to be activation. And instead of even relating to it as fear, I'm relating to it as activation. Like this is sensation and that sensation wants to be expressed through words.
Mm-hmm.
And the more intimate I can be with my body and the more I can listen to my body, the more clearly I'll be able to define and to speak into that space between me and the audience to give them exactly what they need from that interaction and what I need as well. Because the stuff that comes up or that comes through the body speaking in this way, it might be ways of articulating something we're familiar with in a whole new way. And sometimes it's like saying things we've never even acknowledged to ourselves before, like a whole new idea will come through the process.
Yeah. That's interesting. Mm.
And sometimes people, I've had people in the past where, when I've described it in this way that I just did, it's pretty clear what I'm talking about. But in the past where I didn't have the clarity, I had people go, so it's like winging it or improvising. I'm like, no, it's not. Improvising can be you just having a good time and making people laugh. Winging it can mean you waffling and people getting bored and them not even being interested anymore.
Yeah.
This is deeply grounded in relationships. So you're listening to your own body and to the audience's process, if you will, in the room as deeply as you possibly can while you're speaking. So it's like you're being very, very, but not the exercise of being present. You're naturally just present there in the room.
Yeah. So does it mean that they don't need to, for example, memorize anything?
You don't need to memorize word for word. There is structure. And for me, it's like we start with this because this is what creates connection. And then we take it from our essence or our presence into structure. And the structure is like, okay, what is this engagement about? What do people really value and what do they really need to hear? What's going to make this most valuable to them?
Mm-hmm.
And what information, whether stories from my life or statistics or research, do we need to bring into this for it to be most relevant to people?
And this is, go on, please.
Yeah, and I'm going off the assumption that the people I work with already have expertise in one area of their life, right?
Yeah.
So if you were speaking about, I don't know, being a nurse or being connected to your heart, you already know that, like the back of your palm.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a matter of taking the ideas and concepts and information you already have and just giving it a flow so it can land for the audience. But if we make that flow too rigid, then you're basically reading at them from inside your head. And it's not really public speaking. We may as well just call it public recitation of a memorized speech.
Yeah, yeah. So they have this structure. So they actually work on the structure in advance, but then let it flow, you know, by sensation. Yeah, is that right? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. And I'm actually, you know, I'm thinking that does it. I have a question actually, you know, about myself because in my teaching practice sometimes. I have a similar experience that, you know, I feel that things just, you know, words just coming out of my mouth with no particular, I don't know, control and it's just moving, it's flowing really smoothly and connecting to people. But I judged that, I made a judgment about it before that it's possibly because I had so much practice at this particular topic, and that's the reason that, for example, when I you know, I'm teaching holistic health, you know, spirituality and health, all those stuff for so many years, or I'm teaching evidence-based practice for so many years, then I can just, you know, talk about it with no preps, with no control, with no, you know, it's just flowing. Is that right? Is that about practice, or am I right? My feeling is right, or is it something more about that embodied speaking that you say? So
Yeah, well, repetition will create embodiment.
Oh, okay.
If you repeat something enough times, you're going to be embodied in it. And I mean, one, defining embodiment is a thesis in itself. Like, there's not one agreed upon definition, but let's say a working label for it in this case could be unconscious competence. If we're looking at an educational model, unconscious competence being, you can do something without thinking about it. So if you think about, just for the listeners, if you think about driving,
like driving, yeah.
You're driving and you're no longer thinking about it. That's unconscious competence.
Yeah.
And if you had to slow down and explain the process to someone, you could probably do it because you've learned it. But it's like, it's already a part of you. And it's a lot easier than to speak about and convey because it's been a living part of your life for so long.
Yeah.
Why we feel like we need to get on a... look, this does make sense. Like, there's other studies in fear. The problem is when you get on a stage, and by stage I mean whether you're speaking, teaching, or facilitating, or yoga teaching, whatever, any kind of stage, academic, same thing. Fear does this thing where it bypasses our conscious mind.
Yeah.
And there was, like in the American Civil War, they would arm civilians with guns. And then when the opposing army would come at them, the civilians would drop their guns and scream off, yelling and shouting. Because the nervous system just didn't have the capacity to meet that level of fear, which is very different than the trained soldiers. And the stage is quite similar. It can be so deeply scary that it bypasses the mind and people become like a blubbering, nervous mess. Not consciously, it's like they could repeat the same stuff without a problem off the stage. But that environment adds more pressure and more intensity.
Yeah.
And for you, having done teaching for so long, like, it's normal to me that your nervous system can hold that much presence with your students for you to just be able to show up naturally and speak about what you already know.
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah, and I like actually that you know mentioned that those stages of learning that you know we talk about it a lot in NLP and hypnotherapy as well. Yeah, so when the learning is just going to be really subconscious, that's the point that consciousness and subconsciousness are kind of aligned, which is exactly what we want to have in embodied speaking too. Yes. Is that right? Yeah. So the conscious and subconscious are aligned. Yeah. So yeah, I can actually just, you know, I can ask questions and questions about this topic because this is my favorite topic, but I know that we can't actually go forever talking about this. But my next question is, does it impact people's wellness and health also? So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah.
So yeah, if for example embodied speaking can be used as maybe as a tool, as a method to as you mentioned, you know, release fear and eventually improve and enhance, you know, wellness, health in some aspects.
Yeah, without a doubt. So firstly, I've started calling what I do in live and speaking because embodied is such a widely defined word.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I just have to step out of this because the goal for me is like embodiment is a part of the process, but you can be embodied and not enlivened. And I've seen like amazing dance teachers who are very embodied and they get on stage, but it's like they don't have the capacity to connect with the audience.
Mm.
So for me, it's going beyond embodiment into enlivened. To answer your question, so I've had people after doing trainings with me, everything from saying their sex life just got better, they're mm-hmm. feeling more expressed in their everyday life,
mm-hmm.
They're feeling happier. Some of the students, the first time they get on a stage, so in most of my programs, we create like a grad show at the end. We don't really call it a grad show, but it's essentially one way to describe it, where the mm-hmm. students get up and offer like a 10-minute talk. And when they do that, it's not uncommon for students to come back and say, wow, I'm still in bliss like 24 hours later. Like, this has just changed my life. It's mm-hmm. like a massive weight has been taken off me. And if I go into my theories around this, essentially, like, when you have so much attention and energy coming at you from an audience, it's first going to bring up everything that's been stuck and suppressed in the nervous system.
Yeah.
And if we can meet that and let it move through us, it's going to lift a lot of energy that's been stuck.
Yeah.
And we call that experience fear. On the other side of that is actually a lot of bliss and pleasure, you know?
Yeah.
You're experiencing life in more fullness and there's more energy, like more attention in the room.
Yeah.
Which heightens everything. And when you develop a capacity with speaking and teaching in this way, your words also get magnified. Like the power of your word is magnified because people's attention is on them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to do some studies on this at some stage in the future, where we have some of this like actually researched in terms of the effects it does have when information is just processed verbally compared to when it's processed with presence.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking maybe I have an idea to do a research about the impact of this embodied speaking on anxiety. And yeah, I think, you know, we need to do a research about it, to be honest, and just, you know, just bring some evidence onto the, you know, the scientific world, because it does totally make sense how, you know, it can affect the whole body. And as you mentioned, definitely it does positively affect, you know, relationships. And the other thing is it's coming with, it's bringing us a lot of openness and I think vulnerability. And these are the things that possibly are just, you know, we missed. They are really missed in our world now, because we are under a lot of pressure from the current, you know, new world, and we just suppress a lot of things, and including that fear. But when you teach people, you know, skills to release those fear, that could be possibly, you know, part of their life, to be vulnerable, to be open about everything. And I'm totally interested to know more about it, how it does affect positively the health outcomes.
I would love to go there with you. That sounds amazing.
That's actually, you know, it's just it brings something new into my mind, that there should be something on the board more specifically on this topic, because it's something really new and absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much. We can actually, as I mentioned before, we can talk more about these things. Maybe we can jump on another show if you want to talk more, because ask you where, you know, people can find you, because I'm sure that a lot of people are interested in both aspects, you know, just learning more about embodied speaking in their teaching, you know, teachers like me, and also perhaps a lot of people may seek help and get help using your method, using your tool, just to release their fear and improve the lives in general, the quality of life. So I'm sure that it does relate, you know, to many people. So tell us about how people can find you.
Yeah, thank you, Ness. So I have this, my personal website is miroslavp.com. If you're looking for speaking engagements and to book me for speaking or facilitating, that's the website to go to. The second one is enlivenspeakinginstitute.com. Mm-hmm. That's going for a refresh right now, but should be back up in about 2 weeks. And that's where I have different programs and offerings that ranges from like dealing with fear. There's a 6-week course on more of the embodied speaking and actually like allowing you to develop a relationship to this, to be speaking in a whole different way.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, I have my flagship program, which is called Mastery. And this is basically bringing the enlivened or embodied method into any kind of teaching, speaking, or facilitating you're doing. So it's just allowing you to create far more enlivening relationships between yourself and your students, your audience, whoever it is that you're working with. And just for context, I've had people, like one of the women that's in the course at the moment, she's been on stage over 100 times, been on national television numerous times.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, you know, I realized after doing this course that this is completely different than what I've been doing.
Wow.
It's like, in my words, it's a bit like speaking at people compared to speaking with people.
Or yeah.
Teaching at students as opposed to having students come on the ride with you.
Yeah. Because it's all about presence. Yeah. Awareness. And yeah, that is wonderful. Oh, amazing program. So you're doing amazing job. Thank you so much. So let's just finish with one just final question. Let's just pack up with one final sentence that you can have for audience, I don't know, as an inspiration or, you know, whatever. What is your final advice or something that you can just summarize in one or two sentences? That's a hard question. Yeah.
it's funny because what came up was just be you. But when I say just be you, it's like be the you that you don't even know you are yet. Like be the you that you're discovering when you move towards vulnerability, when you move towards courage. Like that's the you that the world is yearning for, not more regurgitated information. It's like the world needs more of your presence to come through in the unique way than it can through you.
Be the you. Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, I remember actually a quote from Rumi, but you know that I'm a fan of Rumi. But this is exactly what is aligned with that story from Rumi that was looking for a human in the darkness of night with a light in his hand. And people were asking him, what are you looking for, Sheikh? And Sheikh said, I'm looking for a human. And people said, oh, we can't find it. We already searched for it. And Sheikh said, yes, I'm searching for something that is not really visible. And that is, because that is within, that is you. But the you that you haven't actually found it before. And now it's absolutely what you say now, Miroslav. It's just so much resonating with me. Be you. That's all about, you know. It's even not a sentence, just two words. Thank you very much. That was so inspiring chat. So hopefully we can actually, you know, jump on another chat maybe another time, because I really enjoyed.
Likewise, Naz. I thoroughly enjoyed it too. And yes, let's do more of this.
Thank you so much. So bye for now. Until next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed, and I'm very looking forward to hear from you for any inputs, suggestions, and also your subscriptions. Thank you.